Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here with you. This is going to be a fun segment, man.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to this for quite some time. We have Dara Albright, who is a friend of ours for a long time. We've been trying to put this episode together. Dara, you tell me how long?
Yeah, for
months?
A while now.
It's been months now. But you got some big news, right? There's some big changes have occurred in legislation, and you recently wrote an article that kind of explains all this.
Exactly. We are looking at some really interesting times on Wall Street and changes, but really more for Main Street. And I'm really excited to be here with Brian Daly of Ground Floor and Jim Jones of the IRA Exchange and IRA Services. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the really incredible work that both are doing to really democratize the investing landscape. And it, essentially, if you look at it from a big picture perspective, truly thwart a looming retirement crisis that we have in this country. And ultimately, narrow the wealth divide. And this is all happening through really incredible innovations happening in fintech.
And it's going to be my job there just to give you the heads up to whenever you say a term that I don't think that a lay person knows, I'm gonna scream out.
Okay. It's so a great job for you.
So let's start with fintech. What is fintech?
Okay, so fintech is short for financial technology.
And that's financial technology in the sense that there's technology that financial institutions use? Like, how does it apply here?
So in this case, what's happening in both of these companies are incorporating technology to, in one sense, it's to bring, in Brian's case and for Ground Floor, it's to be using technology to bring real estate opportunities, the yields that institutional investors are getting in real estate deals,
right.
Bringing that to individuals. So just as an example, in traditional asset classes, you know, we all know last year, conventional asset classes pretty much underperformed the markets. We saw, you know, the Dow was down, S&P, you know, really underperforming. Even conventional bond funds, even high yield bond funds, just not doing well. What Brian Daly has done with Ground Floor was he has been able to use technology to create a new platform to really simplify the process of and utilize even more interestingly new legislation to enable retail investors to access these type of investment opportunities that were once only available to institutional investors. So, for example, he used one of the new legislation that came out of the Jobs Act called Reg A Plus, mm-hmm. to, and he'll talk a little bit more about that, but to create a new asset class called an LRO.
What does that stand for? Or should I wait for Brian?
Yeah. You want to jump in
here, Brian?
It's a limited recourse obligation, but that doesn't sound as sexy as it is.
An LRO.
But the sexy part is that Ground Floor investors are generating 13% returns. So,
well, and they're doing it in, you know, 6 to 12 months, you know, on an average basis, with an asset, with an investment that's backed by a house, hasn't been possible before unless you have hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars in the bank.
Now, so this sounds like a combination that the technology is growing so rapidly and being more powerful so that you're able to do a lot more things with this technology that historically you hadn't been able to because it was too much money to have these supercomputers to do things. Every year it gets faster and cheaper. So that gives you a platform that allows you to do some things that you couldn't have done 10 years ago.
I think what's most exciting about consumer fintech today is that whether people believe that they have information and power or whether they actually do doesn't matter. What's actually happening is people are using it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're using it to do all kinds of things in transportation and financial technology and other fields that I think of Ground Floor. I think of a lot of the things that Dara writes about and that James is working on too as being emblematic of that. So people now don't have to turn their money over to a wealth advisor or a middleman on Wall Street.
Because they're now more empowered because they can have access to this information?
Well, they have access to the information, which makes it possible. And they also understand now that we're all connected in a way that we haven't been mm-hmm. before. And that's a historic change. That's a sea change. And that's wending its way through industries, you know, a diverse set of industries. The one that we're working on today and we're talking about today is investing and saving and household capital formation. Right. That one turns out to be incredibly important if you want to do things like retire right. or send your kid to college or go on a vacation or afford that new car without going into debt. There are classes of people, about 2-3% of the American population, who have been able to invest in these private deals on very special, very preferential terms for decades. And they're depression era regulations that, you know, were put in place by the federal government. They're well-meaning, they're good regulations. We abide by them. We use them, but we harness them with this technology change to open up an investment class that's never been open to ordinary people before. And that's been for good reasons, right? I mean, we need to protect people from themselves. We need to protect people from bad actors out there. That's what the regulations do. What is new is that we all now have information and power and accessibility that was never there before. So Ground Floor has done a ton of work. We've invested over $1 million in 18 months of effort and prototyped a product here in Georgia that, you know, was hard to get done. But we're the standard bearer in this kind of lending, this kind of asset for the masses that's backed by a real estate loan. You know, it's been possible to invest in other people's credit card debt before. You can do that at Lending Club and Prosper. Some people are scared of that, understandably so. Even if you do it, you got to put your money out there for 3 to 5 years. You got to sit there and hope to make 14%, but actually only make 6 to 8% because it turns out a lot of those people don't pay back the loans.
Right.
In our case, we've got a new asset class. You now, just like wealthy people with big checkbooks, you get to go out and with no understanding of real estate at all required, you can show up to a website, start off with as little as $10, $10, not $10,000, $10. You can start out and become a real estate investor. And all you got to do is lend your money out for 6 months to give it a try.
Part of that, that's where the technology comes into play, where you can do a transaction for $10 and that makes sense, financial sense.
We put hundreds of people, I'll give you an example for a loan that just funded on Sunday. We put 524 people in a loan that's for a house that's being renovated on the Isle of Palms on Waterway Boulevard. 524 people put in $387,000 together. I mean, think about that. Right. Technology does make that possible.
Right.
Some regulatory change makes that possible. And more importantly, people believing that they actually have the information and the power to make these decisions for themselves instead of the status quo, which is you either turn your money over to the bank where it sits idly and makes nothing, or you turn your money over to Wall Street. And that's the false alternative, banks or Wall Street, Wall Street or banks. If you turn it over to the banks, you get nothing. If you turn over Wall Street, you might get something, but the person, the middleman who's putting that money in for you gets about half of the upside. I mean, wealthy people don't pay half the upside. Wealthy people pay a small fee to wealth managers to manage their money, and then they pay typically 10 or 20% of the upside. That's what wealthy people, that's called a 2-in-20 deal. That's the standard in asset management today. That's not what we get. That's not what the rest of us who make under $200,000 a year or have less than a million liquid get.
So now the government tends not to be a leader in taking risks in this manner and usually are behind the technology. Now you're saying that they've opened up some opportunities for the regular person?
Well, yes.
Some of the regulation has shifted slightly.
They have. Some very forward-thinking people back in 2012 got together with the Obama administration and managed to cobble together something known as the Jobs Act. The Jobs Act has seven different sections to it, seven different titles. Some of them are about making IPOs more possible for companies. Some of those sections are about changing the way that you can advertise, you know, or solicit for these private investment opportunities. And some of the provisions can be used to funnel capital from individual investors into small companies, into private deals, private real estate deals. Now, as you might expect, the legislation was articulated one way, and then innovators like Ground Floor and some other companies who have been on the bleeding edge of this have utilized it in a way that nobody really expected.
Right.
Nobody knew that the most successful offering under Regulation A would be not a small company that's a mini IPO, or not a small business that's raising money from its customers, which is how people thought some of these rules would be
used. So that was in the mind of the politician. That was the intent.
I think so. I mean, that's what was talked about, and that's what the visionaries who worked on the legislation. But really, any legislation, any regulation like this is just, it's a platform. And innovators, the marketplace has to use it. Now, we manufactured a security out of it. Much like an investment bank would manufacture a security, that's what we did. That's what an LRO is. It's a manufactured financial product that works in a certain way. There are dozens of places that an accredited investor can put his or her money into a real estate deal on the web. What's special about the security that we manufactured is not only is it open to everybody, but even for the people who have access to all those deals, we're the only company that is submitted to the very high level of disclosure requirements and the very high level of regulation that's required in order. I mean, we basically look like a public company. If you want to, you can go on to Edgar and see how much I make, how much all my leading executives make, how much we pay for our office space. You can see everything about us and our board members. That's not true about anywhere else that an accredited investor could stick his or her money into these deals. We're the only company in this field that submits that level of disclosure. And that matters because when you're handing over your money, whether you have much or not, or whether the $100 or $1,000 that you might invest in a ground floor loan is a lot to you, or whether you're just testing it out, it's important to people to know what they're getting into. So that's the purpose of the laws, is to make sure that those who are taking money from retail investors, from individual investors, are clear about what's being done with that money, how that money is being managed, what people can expect, what the risks are. Those are good aspects of the laws that have been around since the Depression. We submit to that level of regulation gladly because we don't want shysters to ruin it for the rest of us. What's new and different, as you said, is that individuals now have the information and the power to go participate. Regulation set the frame so that innovators like Ground Floor and other companies that are doing this could open that up. But we still have to meet the same bar. This is exactly what people were scared of in 2012, that all of a sudden the gates would be open for the shysters.
Right.
The gates are not open for the shysters. I assure you, we spent $1 million and 18 months living up to, you know, audit requirements, 174 pages of disclosure, right, that you can download from the SEC's website about us. We met that high bar. And by the way, we're glad to. Everybody should, because this is people's money. This is money that, again, the reason James is here is this is money that people are depending on to retire, to buy a house, to afford a car, to make their life better, to save for a medical expense or a medical emergency. This is real money that makes a real difference in, you know, U.S. households' quality of life and standard of living.
Now, you mentioned individuals. Is this only Georgia individuals, or is this something nationwide?
Oh, no. When we first started, we were only available in Georgia, and that's thanks to Secretary Kemp, who, Georgia was one of only two states in the United States that had the foresight and the vision to liberalize its securities laws and its securities regulation within boundaries. We were only allowed to raise about $1 million at a time. We were only allowed to take $10,000 from any one person in any one year. So we submitted to some pretty tight constraints. We could only do loans in Georgia. We did that for 18 months while we manufactured this product with the SEC. So Secretary Kemp gets a lot of credit for making that possible in Georgia. Had we not done that 18 months here in Georgia, had that law not been available, this wouldn't have happened. So Secretary Kemp and his staff get the credit for making, sort of setting the frame here in Georgia for how this would be done. We were the most successful issuer under that set of regulations here. But August 31st of last year, the SEC qualified our offering to allow us to take investors' money and market the securities across state lines. We're not nationwide yet. We're in about a third of the country, represented by 9 states. And, you know, over the next year or two, we hope to be in every state because we're regulated by the state level, by the way, and the federal level, both.
Hey, Lee, I just registered on the Ground Floor website. It's
that easy?
Well, it took 7 seconds.
Excellent.
And I'll just tell you, it says your state is already qualified. This was the next screen I got. Your invitation to join thousands of other internet lenders will be coming soon. In the meantime, explore your Ground Floor lender account to add your bank account and initiate a funds transfer so you're ready to invest when your invite arrives. That's how fast this thing is.
We have so much capital flowing into these products once people try it out and they test it that we have to control the invitation. So I don't think you'll wait too long for your invite. Might take a week or two.
Well, I've got an in.
Yeah. We'll talk about it after the show. But so we're controlling the flow of capital that comes in. But we intend to have enough loans on the shelf for everybody to participate. There should be enough for everybody to go around eventually. We're a fintech startup. We are 20 people, you know, growing pretty fast, but trying to do it in a really measured way. So sorry for the wait.
No, that's okay. No, I'm just quite impressed. I mean, I'm theoretically a techno idiot. I'm a little bit of a semi-seasoned investor, but I'm a techno idiot, and this is just really easy.
Awesome.
So now that you have the product, that's half the story. So now we have Jim here for the other half, because the problem is that most retail investors, small retail investors, they don't invest with money that they have sitting around in their checking account or their savings account. That's just not their investment money. The money that they really use to invest is the money that they have sitting in their retirement accounts, their 401ks, their IRAs. That's the problem, though, is that traditional retirement vehicles or plans do not allow what you call investments into, we would call like an LRO, a ground floor LRO would be considered an alternative asset. So traditional retirement plans do not accept alternative asset classes. So what's required is a self-directed IRA. The problem has been with the self-directed IRA because of a lack of having technology in that industry. It has been very difficult for the self-directed IRA industry to integrate on a technology level with platforms such as Ground Floor. Now, that is all changing. A company called IRA Services, which has been around for over 30 years, they have $6 billion in assets under management. It's a traditional custodian and trust company. They spent the last 3 years and $10 million building the technology, the backbone infrastructure to make self-directed IRA investing both affordable and easy. So that's why we're really excited to have Jim here today to talk a little bit about that and now how investors could invest into the Ground Floor platform using their retirement accounts and capture these 13%+ annual returns in their retirement accounts for the first time. And that's what's new, and that's what technology is being making it possible.
Well, welcome, Jim.
Thank you.
How did Dara do? Did she?
She pretty much said it all.
We're done here.
I think we're done. That's a wrap.
So, can you share a little bit about some of these statistics? Is it accurate that what you were saying, most people don't invest like from their checking account, they do invest from, you know, some sort of a retirement account?
Yeah. So here's an interesting statistic. For every $1 in checkings and savings accounts, there's $12 available in a retirement account. And what's ironic about this new fintech space, whether it's equity or peer-to-peer or real estate crowdfunding, crowd finance, 99% of the industry is investing in tax inefficient, taxable cash accounts. And there's a reason for that. So just to kind of recap what Dara said and give a little bit of sense to the size of the retirement market, in the United States, there are $7.6 trillion in individual retirement accounts. And of that, again, approximately 99% is in publicly traded stocks, bonds, mutual funds, and ETFs. So when you think about what happened in 2001 and then again in 2008, the average investor lost 50 to 60% of their taxable cash investments and then the same duplicitous in their retirement accounts. Devastated, absolutely devastated. Ironically, wealthy people are only invested an average 22% of their portfolio in publicly traded stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. 50 to 60% are invested in real estate, and the remaining amount is private equity and private debt, which is really these new asset classes. Mm-hmm. So people would be looking toward a self-directed IRA to use their retirement account to invest in these alternative assets. Here's the problem. When you have a fintech company that's we just experienced, it took about 7 seconds to get on board with Ground Floor. The self-directed IRA industry is run by non-fiduciary trust companies. And the technology that they used is legacy 40-year-old IT systems that the banks are using that are being replaced by a lot of these fintech companies. So in reality, what that means, it's taking 7 seconds to open an account, but it's taking 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks to open up a self-directed IRA account, fund it, and then make the actual investment. Doesn't work. So for the last 3 or 4 years, I've been pioneering self-directed IRAs, not too successfully with a lot of these platforms until recently.
So when you say not too successfully, why is that? Is that a technology issue or is it a regulatory issue?
It's a technology issue. So they're online, the client is online, ready to invest, again, in a matter of seconds, and it's taking 4, 6, 8 weeks to actually complete that investment in a self-directed IRA. So, and that's because the technology does not integrate with the platform. It doesn't automate. It's a manual system.
So human beings are involved in the transactions?
And 50, 60 pages of paper.
Paper, that, making copies and...
Faxing. A $100 billion industry is still run by faxes and paper.
Is that true?
Absolutely. It's
somebody gets a fax, they wait for it, the paper appears, they pick it up, they walk down.
And then if they forget a medallion stamp guarantee or a date, maybe 4 weeks later,
we're
somebody will
again.
Let them know. You start from scratch. So this system basically is now automated. It's paperless. So we're able to make it paperless. We're able to automate and integrate with the platforms. And because of this technology, once again, it pushes the pricing down without all this human intervention.
Sure.
And it makes it very affordable. Where in the past, when people were perhaps investing in multiple notes, economically, it just didn't work and make sense.
I think what were some of the numbers? It's something like typically to invest with a self-directed IRA, charged a couple hundred dollars per asset.
So it's important to understand that a self-directed IRA custodian is a non-fiduciary trust company. So they are not allowed to promote, sell, endorse, solicit. They're just simply a structure that allows an individual retirement account or a small 401k, individual 401k, to invest in these alternatives. So they do not make a piece of the transaction. The business model is based upon annual fees. Average $50 to open account, $300, $400, $500 per asset per year. On top of that is an asset under management fee. That's usually several basis points per asset annually. And then there's typically a $100 transaction fee. So if somebody's going to invest in, let's say, 15, 20 notes, you're typically looking at $3,000 or $4,000. And if it's a $10,000 investment, obviously it doesn't work economically.
Right. Well, like you can't do is $10 to get in.
That would absolutely not work.
Right.
Yeah. So the new pricing schedule is either 25 basis points flat annually across as many assets that you might hold as possible, or $100. No account opening fees, no assets under management fee, no per asset fee, no transaction fee.
Now, has that change occurred, or this is something down the road that will occur?
It's launched.
So now, how many companies, like large companies, you mentioned 99% are in stocks, or I guess that's what they use, the vehicles they use. Are companies being open to this more, or is this more kind of individual people with their own small business or their own business they control, rather than, you know, the Cokes or the IBMs or the large, larger enterprise companies?
So because we're a technology play, we're partnering with the platforms that are making these investments available. And then the second piece of this, which Darryl will probably talk to, is then getting the distribution. It's being able to work hand in hand with these platforms to get distribution out into the independent advisory community and let them know that these types of alternative assets are available. And that's when I think we'll see the industry really scale.
And I think we still, you know, there's still a lot of educational work on our part. We really need to kind of go out there, get the message. We need to let the public know that these asset classes are even available, that they could actually access them through their retirement accounts. I mean, right now, nobody even knows that this even exists.
Right, because if you're a typical person that works for a company, especially, they give you 10 choices, 20 or whatever in the number of choices, you think that that's your universe of choices, right?
Exactly.
Like you don't know what you don't know.
Exactly. Yes. So, I mean, that's why, you know, we're great to be on the air here today.
Right, because
I mean,
now
starting
you're,
to get
so now you
the
can get that person going, how come I can't invest in a ground floor or one of these other assets?
Exactly.
And that's what it takes, right? In order to create as much noise to get was it squeaky wheel gets the grease? You got to kind of make some noise to let people know, hey, we want this. Why aren't we getting this?
Exactly. We have to get the message out there.
Right.
We you know, more. And I think, you know, we've started to see that. We, you know, we really started doing that, getting out there with the events and making some noise about, you know, how, you know, the landscape and just how unfair it actually is. And it's a start, but I think that more and more we're going to, you know, more and more people are finding out about it. More and more people are gaining interest in the asset class and just interest in alternative assets altogether. I mean, if you look at it, when alternative assets just started emerging, the institutions, you know, probably what, maybe 10, 15 years. I mean, you know, more and more they've started allocating more and more of their portfolio to alternative assets. Retail investors didn't even know about it. They're just starting to get to know about it now. And I think a lot of the work that we're going to be doing, you know, radio shows, television, you know, events, really kind of to get out there and make sure that retail investors, I mean, we'll probably need some ex-Law and Order actors to do some infomercials.
That's what it takes, really. You know? Well,
I think so.
An ideal scenario, though, is when I go visit with my portfolio manager, my independent advisor, is for Chris to say, hey, Stone, I want to share something with you. Or even better, let's go have lunch with Jim. Or say, I mean, that's where you want to get to, right?
So you have a whole set of problems that are actually normal for a new technology entering a consumer market and consumers adopting a technology. In finance, it's a little more pronounced because here's the problem with finance and investing. It's boring. Number one, it's boring. People are busy. We live in a world where there are much better things to do with your time. And that is all the more true when, as has been the case with the status quo, you don't actually make anything. Most people don't like to put a lot of time into something that they feel that they're bad at doing because they actually don't make very much at the end. They don't like the middlemen that they have to deal with. I mean, look at banks and how consumers feel about banks. Mm-hmm. Look at Wall Street. Look at brokers and how people feel about brokers. Not high net promoter scores, not high public opinion. So you have something that's boring, that people don't feel successful at, that doesn't actually yield very much. So why put in the time? So that's your first problem in finance in particular. It's true with any technology, though, because you mentioned your financial advisor. Unfortunately, when you have an industry that's as large as this one, with so many influential people in it, the channel has a lot of power. And until we're all big enough and mature enough to pay off the channel doesn't easily yield access. So if you go and talk to financial advisors, they want to know, how do they get paid? I mean, unsurprisingly, right? They're in business to make money. And a lot of these alternative assets are not set up yet to pay them the way that the existing kind of status quo pay them because we're not large enough to pay them yet. This is a problem in all kinds of, in all forms of consumer technology adoption. Now, how do we change it? We start showing what the returns are. Sort of those of you who are listening, who actually find investing to be kind of interesting and who see that, yeah, it's an unknown product in an unknown category from an unknown company. That's true. But some of you are intrepid enough to go take the risk and put up your $10 or put up your $100. That's why we made it $10. It's just $10. And once people try it, yeah, they might invest $100 or $500 to start. But what we see is people like to win. They like to win when it doesn't take much money to win. And when the feedback cycle is 6 to 12 months, it completes itself pretty quickly. So people rapidly start investing $2,000, $5,000, $10,000. I mean, your mileage will vary based on how large your bank account is. But at the end of the day, people get excited by winning. And they get excited by winning on something that doesn't take much time or expertise. Real estate investing, among all investing, is especially boring and frustrating and fraught with disaster. So when people get the idea that, oh my God, this is so clean and neat and tidy, I can have a portfolio of 20 houses that I'm lending on and I'm going to make 14% over the next 6 to 12 months. And then I get to go do it again. And I get these little updates, kind of like I'm watching a house flipping show. That's why we built it in this category. It's not because I'm a real estate guy, right? I mean, you can kind of build your own REIT without having to deal with the REIT people. Who likes the REIT people? No one likes the REIT people. You know what I mean? Right. These are $1 billion plus funds, you know, nameless, faceless people investing in shopping centers that you've never heard of. Who cares about that? No way. Go build your own portfolio of houses. That's what we say.
But don't you think that now in today's world, there's more and more people that are comfortable with, you know, like the Kickstarter, the Kiva, where they see a project, they go, oh, look, that sounds cool.
Yep.
You know, I'll throw $100 there. Or I'll, you know, I'll help this person, you know, buy a cow here. You know, they see the cow.
Yes.
You know, so some of that is kind of opening their mind to these type of experiences where, well, if it's logical, if I help that person make a cow, you know, buy a cow, you know, to build this house, that kind of makes sense too.
I love it that you bring up Kiva because that's a shining example of how the web in your disaggregated, hyper-fractionalized form
the chaos,
can do good in the world.
Right.
Right.
Just as long as there's some platform that kind of helps it facilitate
it. And if people want to do good in the world by financing houses in certain neighborhoods, like we've done in Adair Park or Capitol View here in Atlanta, and there are neighborhoods that need capital in order to turn over, we are all too proud to be part of that. But if all you really want to do is be a greedy little capitalist and make money, we're happy to have you
too. You can do that too.
You know, it's a platform.
There's something for everybody.
You know, just like on Kickstarter, you know, you've got Kiva, you've got Kickstarter, you've got GoFundMe, you've got things that are done for humanitarian interest, but you also have just rampant consumerism.
Right.
You also have art, and you have the full range of human experience on these platforms. And that's what a good platform is. It accommodates all of that.
So on the horizon, could I potentially go through the same process with you or another company that kind of follows suit and start investing in startups or small firms? This is not going to be confined to real estate.
No, it's not going to be confined to real estate. Real estate is just where it's beginning, because it turns out that 2/3 of Americans are or will be investors in this asset class. So we all understand it well, and we watch HGTV and we see how cool it is to flip a house.
Right.
And it turns out to have a really short fruit fly-esque gestation period. You know, it's awesome. The cycle runs pretty quickly. So that's where you're going to see it first. And that's true with any consumer technology adoption curve. You're always going to see some segment like this bitten off first. And then the question will be, what's the next segment? And we're thinking about that at ground floor, but we're really busy being good house flipping lenders today. Sure, there are other things we want to do. There are other things we will do. There will be other companies that see the opportunity. There's one that I want to tell you about called Street Shares. If you are a veteran or you are associated with a military family, you get the opportunity to go fund other veteran small businesses, veteran-owned small businesses. It is a very cool company. You can lend money to these small businesses. That's another wonderful example of a platform that's being built on the back of the same regulation that we're using. Let 1,000 platforms bloom. I'm a fan of the category. I don't need mine to be the only one, or we just happen to be the first. We're the first Regulation A offering that was done this way. We're only the third company that the SEC ever qualified in the last decade since it started with Lending Come and Prosper to build a security or manufacturer security like this. Street Shares has done it. There will be others and other asset classes. It's a very exciting time that will take decades to unfold, but it will fundamentally change the way that household capital is formed, deployed, and the way that it grows. And that's what I know Dara's in it for. It's what I'm in it for. It's not for the real estate. It's not for the ground floor LROs. It's for that mega trend that is not going to stop.
Now, you mentioned P2P. Can you explain that term, peer-to-peer? How does that work in this environment?
Well, when you say peer-to-peer, what essentially you're saying is individuals funding or lending to and borrowing from one another. I mean,
right.
that's the peer-to-peer concept. So, you know, that the industry sort of, when it started, that's really kind of what Prosper and Lending Club, that's basically what their roots are. It was investors lending to and borrowing from each other. So, you know, what we're seeing now is that the industry has, once a lot of these investors started doing that, and they started realizing, wow, you know, I'm kind of making 8, 10, sometimes 12% returns. And this is not too shabby when banks are returning, you know, you know, almost nothing. You're back basically paying them to hold on to your money, better off under your mattress. So I think, you know, that was really how it started. And then, so then the hedge funds and some of the institutional players on Wall Street said, ooh, there's some money to be made here. So then they started cutting checks and entering the space. And then, unfortunately, what happened at that point was they came in with their muscle and their technology muscle, let's say, and were able to grab the loans, as soon as they came, the notes, as soon as they came out on the platform. They basically were able to get first dibs. And the small retail investor kind of got shut out. So the whole industry changed its name from P2P to marketplace lending, because it was no longer P2P. Thanks to companies like Ground Floor and Street Shares and companies that are really using some the regulations, I think, in a very meaningful way, to actually create these new products and asset classes for retail investors. I think that's changing. And I think you're going to see now the industry is going to be moving back to its roots, back to the P2P, thanks to companies like a Ground Floor. So, I'm excited that, that's what they call P2P investing. But I think we'll probably start to see a lot. And you may know this better than I, but I would expect we'll start to see a lot of different names start to emerge.
You know how they say marketers always ruin a good channel, for advertising? It turns out Wall Street always ruins a good asset class. Like Wall Street shows up and all of a sudden the hot money comes flowing in, the hedge funds. Unfortunately, our industry, not us, we've never taken a dollar of institutional capital for our loans. We've done 100% retail. Every deal we've done has been open to everyone. And the jurisdictions were registered were unique in that sense. But our industry, unfortunately, got high on, the fructose corn syrup of hedge fund investing. And they grew too fast. They're paying the price now. On-deck capital, started right along with Lending Club and Prosper announcing earnings shortfalls because the institutional capital wasn't showing up to fund their loans. There were some improprieties at Lending Club related to sort of not cooking the books, really, nothing that insidious, but unfortunately moving dollars around and doing special deals with institutions. And that's what happens when the big money shows up. When the big money shows up, so does the misbehavior. And that's why we like keeping it pure and clean and as long as we can. I think any capital marketplace has to have a diversity of sources, and the industry is in violent agreement about that. What the industry doesn't yet realize, and what we're trying to show them, and Street Shares is trying to show them, and others, is that the broadest base of capital wins. That when all of you listening are participating, it keeps the big boys honest. And so, like I said at the beginning, it's not whether people think they have the power or whether they actually have the power, because when they start behaving as though they do, it's the behavior that you pay attention to, because that's what brings change. That's what Ground Floor is about. I think what's happening with the industry right now is normal for the boom and bust cycle for finance and investing as we know it. I'm hopeful that when we build a financial system that looks a little bit more like the internet itself, highly disaggregated, hyper fractionalized, open to all, very transparent, hyper efficient. That's the world that the internet is creating. It's doing it in finance. When that happens, I'm hoping that volatility decreases. Reliability increases, ordinary people feel more comfortable, and then that's going to have the same kind of self-reinforcing cycle that Wall Street has built for itself, with the caveat that I don't think we'll have the swings that we've seen before.
And, you make a great point, because I think what it really all comes down to, and when you want to mitigate risk, it comes down to having the ability to diversify. That's what this industry is about. It's on what your retirement portfolio, you want to have a well-diversified portfolio. You wouldn't take $100,000 and put it all on one stock. You would diversify not only across a basket of stocks, but a basket across of different asset classes. Now, if you don't have a lot of money, you don't have as much of an opportunity to spread that money across different assets, and different companies. Now, that's what technology is now making possible, the ability for even micro investors to be well diversified, because now you could take, $100 and spread that out. So that's basically, I think, where we're going towards. And I think you are going to see retail coming back. And just to give you an idea, big picture, what the big picture implications of what this all means, if you look at what happened 40, 50 years ago, we in America, the retirement landscape was basically people had their pension plans. People either invested in stocks, bonds, very little, in mutual funds. That just sort of was starting to emerge, really 40 years ago. But really, stocks, bonds, you put your money in the bank and you relied on your pension. And so you relied on your employer. And then what happened in the late 70s, early 80s, we saw the emergence of the IRA and the 401k. When that happened, everything changed, because no longer was it the employer responsible for your retirement. You became responsible, the individual. So now the individual, it was not only your responsibility to take money out of your paycheck each week and actually save it. It was also your responsibility to understand how to properly create a well-diversified portfolio and make sure that you're picking, appropriate investments. And so what happened was, if you see, and it's very interesting, you could look at charts of the history of the wealth disparity in the country. After the 29 crash, we went through a period in this country where you saw the wealth disparity was evening out. I mean, you saw that.
So when no one has money, then it evens out.
it went down during, the 50s and the 60s, mm-hmm. when we saw the middle class rising. When it started to turn was really when the retirement infrastructure changed. And what happened there was now, you had people who had the ability to have, put money into an IRA, into a 401k, into invest in these alternative assets. And all of a sudden, we now have experienced, 40 years of that almost. And now you see, wow, look at the wealth disparity in this country. I mean, you could look at the chart. I mean, it was, it's just eye popping to see it was actually at that point where the wealth disparity started to increase. And unless we do something to level the playing field, to democratize access to alternatives such as ground floor, to allow people the ability to invest into these products with their retirement plans, we're just going to see the wealth disparity continue to spike. And I think that's what I'm so excited about, these two companies here and what's going on in the space, because I think we have a real opportunity now through technology and through some really exciting and groundbreaking legislation that I think is really meaningful and fair to turn that around.
Now, at this time, when there is this much chaos, transparency is more and more important, right? You can't play here unless you're transparent. Like, for that gives the lay person at least a shot, right? When there's less transparency, they're not in on it, so they never win. Transparency is kind of a must-have in this environment. When there's chaos also, people make poor choices, right? That's part of the deal when you have an open system, an open platform. That's what's great about the internet, right? There's great websites. There's not so great websites because it's open. There could be both. When there's players that aren't playing nice for people, that's when the government tends to want to help and then want to protect us from ourselves, right? So now where are we at on that? Like right now they've opened the door a little bit and created regulation that lets people play in this environment a little bit. When they see somebody misbehaving, usually the instinct is to help and to protect us. Are they now backtracking? Is there any sense of, hey, there were some people that were misbehaving, maybe we have to rethink this, or are we still saying, let's go for it?
No, I think that we're seeing some legislation actually going in the direction of, you know, towards the democratizing the landscape.
So that didn't scare them that a couple people misbehaved and.
No, well, we haven't seen the fallout on that yet. So I would expect that we'll probably see some bills being introduced. My sense is, I mean, you have congressmen like Congressman McHenry and Congressman Schweikert. We have Schweikert's bill is H.R. 2187, which is the Fair Investment Opportunity for Professionals Expert Act. And that's legislation that is basically changing the definition of the accredited investor. So opening it up to more investors.
Even more people.
To even more people. And we're seeing Congressman McHenry, his signature bill was the original crowdfund bill. That went into the Jobs Act. He actually introduced the Fixed Crowdfunding Act, which is being voted on, and I think it's actually some of the changes that he has introduced in the Fixed Crowdfunding Act. I think are going to go a long way to help retail investors.
So is everybody in the room bullish about this? This is all something that you think that more people are going to get involved, more individual investors are going to be able to access this and will access this?
What we don't know is what the road will look like and what turns it will take and what ups and downs there will be. The end result is certain. So progress wins. And you're either the kind of person that believes that or you're not. I am. I couldn't get out of bed and do what I do for a living right. In the morning if I didn't believe that. And I think the same question can be asked in a lot of different spheres. But if you're the kind of person that believes that progress wins, this is progress and it will win. Are there going to be bumps and bruises along the way? Well, guess what? In industry, legislators, we're all human beings. And so we're going to do appropriately human things along the way for good, bad, ugly, and indifferent. And I think it'll be exciting. I promise you that. It'll bring a lot more life into saving and investing. But the end result of people having more information, people having more power, people having more wherewithal, people earning more with their money, the playing field being leveled, that is happening. And if you doubt it, just go look at some other industry that you do know about if you don't know about finance. The same thing that's happening there is going to happen and is already well underway here. What we don't know is how long it takes and what it looks like to get there. We just know what it looks that it's going to happen.
And I'll say one more thing. You ask a great question. You ask what will the future look like? Well, I can guarantee one thing. I could guarantee that everything will change because we're constantly evolving. But the only way to actually predict the future, as Abraham Lincoln said, is to create it. And that's what we're all doing here today. We're creating the future.
Now, Jim, for you, what do you need more? What do you need to happen more in order for more people to access your service?
It's education. It's doing exactly what we're doing here. It's what we're doing with regional conferences. It's what we're doing with national conferences. It's educating people that they have alternatives beyond the public traded securities. And the impact is tremendous. So the average retail investor with a blended portfolio is looking at 6 to 7%. So if we use the rule of 72, that says that at 6 to 7% return, your portfolio will double every 11 years. Now we can flip that upside down and say with some of these alternative offerings, such as the ground floor that are in the 12-14% range, an asset will double every 7 years at 11%. So if you take the average retail investor in their 40s, that asset doubles 4 times in their lifetime. So a $10,000 investment becomes a hefty six-figure investment. A $100,000 investment becomes a $1 million portfolio. That's very significant. Even more significant, people need to realize and understand that in most IRAs today, they have a mortgage on that IRA, and that mortgage is Uncle Sam. So when they turn age 70 and a half, guess what? With federal and state taxes, depending upon where they live, 30 to 35% of that, a good third is going to go to Uncle Sam. So if people understand that they can do this by starting to convert over to Roth IRAs, pay that mortgage off early, then at the end, when that portfolio turns four times, it's tax-free. They never pay taxes. So imagine a $100,000 retirement account becoming $1 million retirement account where you never pay taxes. And set up properly, then if you have an estate plan that includes your children gets to stretch that over their lifetime and do the math on that. It really changes the retirement structure. So as I like to say, you know, 1% of Americans retire rich, but 100% of Americans can retire richer. And that's just by doing the right things. And that's being, we're not saying that you take your entire individual retirement account and invest in alternative assets, but you learn to diversify that out to get those alpha returns.
Now, Dara, thank you so much for putting this show together.
Oh, thank you for having us. Now I'm inspired. I think we should do the retirement radio show.
Well, is there events? Jim mentioned some events that you guys are up to. Are there events upcoming?
There are. I mean, we haven't announced official dates yet, but we will. I mean, feel free. You know, you could check out my website, daraalbright.com. You know, I'm constantly writing about this, and when we have new events and webinars coming up, you know, feel free to sign up. And we look forward to meeting in person and on air.
All right. Now, Jim, website for you?
Is iraservices.com and iraexchange.net.
And who do you want to go to that website? Who's the people that you want to communicate with and educate?
Any investors that are looking.
So individuals as well as organizations that are in that space?
Correct. Yes. Thank you.
And Brian? Groundfloor.us, right?
All of our friendly neighborhood house flippers can go to groundfloor.us or groundfloor.com because we raised some money and were able to buy it from the domain squatter who had it, which is good. And it helped that the WTBS show actually crashed and burned. That was good. So if you flip houses, no real estate investors, point them to groundfloor.us or groundfloor.com. And if you are interested in getting started with investing and dipping your toe in the water, we welcome you. And if you heard it on the show and you send me an email at brian@groundfloor.us, or if you tweet me at brian_Dally, then I'll get you in right away. How about that?
You're going to cut the line a little?
Oh,
I'll
baby.
Let you cut the line.
I'm already in direct communication with this outfit. They've already sent me an email. All right. Fantastic show, gang. Until next time, this is Stone Payton and Lee Cantor and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.